Welcome to the Unblocking Crypto Podcast. This podcast is not financial advice. It's meant for entertainment purposes only. These are just the opinions of a couple of rambling wrecks.
Welcome back to Unblocking Crypto, episode 160. Al, good to see you again.
Good to see you, Jason.
Man, so an eventful week and a half or so here lately. The market has been intriguing to pay attention to, pros and cons. Although at the end of the day, I don't think it's super bad. I think there's still a lot of really positive news going on. The first one that I saw that's kind of really interesting is the SEC is now dropping their lawsuit against Coinbase, and they've kind of agreed in principle. And I think Robinhood and the SEC are going to have a similar decision as well. So at least we're moving in the right direction with a lot of these U.S. crypto companies that instead of the SEC trying to fight them and shut them down, they're going to be working with them, it looks like.
Yeah, that's what I saw too. And there's a couple of other suits that are getting dropped. I don't remember who all they've got in their sites, but it was, I don't know if it was Binance or another exchange, but it appears that the new administration starting to erode the old administration's activities and some of this stuff's going away.
Yeah, it's even, you got two more ETFs. So Franklin Templeton's Easy Peasy ETF and Hashtag's Crypto Index for the US, they're both live. They have the Bitcoin and Ethereum exposure in a single ETF, which is exciting to see. And even Hashtag's, they filed an S1 to add even more, like Solana, XRP, Cardano, Link, Avalanche, Litecoin, Uniswap. So it's getting to the point where there's going to be some diversification, and the SEC is saying, oh yeah, we're open to all of these now instead of just Bitcoin and Ethereum, the only two that we'll ever talk about.
Yeah, I follow the Bloomberg like ETF guys, Eric Balkunas and James Seaford, and it's like a barrage of new ETF applications and things like that for all kinds of different cryptos. And so I think that the industry knows now's the time to act, and the SEC is allowing a lot of stuff to go on. So I think that's where we're at.
Yeah, I think those guys even mentioned that the SEC has finally acknowledged in-kind creations and redemptions, which would be huge for ETFs. That would be amazing. Staking in the Ethereum ETFs is something that they're talking about. Solana, XRP, Litecoin, Doge ETFs, which is kind of crazy to think about certain times. They're very open to constructive conversations, which is the opposite of what it was last administration. And then their regulation is going to be via conversation, not enforcement. That's exciting. That's probably the most positive news we've heard out of the SEC since crypto started at this point.
Yeah. And I mean, we're still just a hair over a month deep into the new administration, and there's definitely action left and right on this thing. So I anticipate the next couple of years are pretty pro crypto, pro Bitcoin.
Yeah. And then to kind of finish off what I saw about the SEC, they're launching their cyber and emerging technologies unit to really target cyber related misconduct, including fraud, hacks, and cybersecurity. So that's exciting to see. I think that they're shutting down their group that was just targeting the actual companies and now trying to go after the people that are creating the problems.
Yeah, that's good, because Bybit certainly had a problem, and it seems like it's put the entire industry in a bit of a bearish trend, and $1.4 billion stolen in a social engineering hack. And it looks like those coins have been moved around and maybe converted some of them from Ethereum into Bitcoin. It was kind of a barrage of news when this thing was going down, and I tracked it for a little bit, and then it just kind of kept going and I stopped. So, but it was like $1.4 billion is a lot.
Well, it's the largest exploit ever in crypto history, right? Yeah. So it is huge, but all things considered, it's almost like the market didn't really bat an eye. Like there wasn't this huge drop like we've seen in the past. I mean, it's not doing great, right? But Bybit has kind of come out and said they have the funds. No customers are going to be affected by this. They're not going to lose any money. Everything's good. What's interesting is they think it's tied to the North Korea's Lazarus group. Yep. So it would be good to figure out a way to go after them, right? I think they also, the crazy part is that exploit was done in the multi-sig wallet that Safe provides. And Safe is actually a pretty big name, right? They have over $100 billion in digital assets, over like 7 million accounts. So they took their main interface offline for now to make sure that it wasn't a problem. But that's kind of scary.
Yeah, it's funny because the social engineering hack, you know, maybe last year there was a guy who called some guy that does a podcast, and he recorded the conversation with this social engineering hacker that tried to talk him into giving up his seed phrase or whatever. And they went down the road talking about all that. And that seems to be the easiest angle of attack for these hackers, is to just keep making phone calls until they can find some human error to use as leverage to get into, to get by some security. And how do you take that out? You know, that's a tough one, because this was like a multi-sig wallet, and they were able to get through it. So, you know, there's the human side is the part of crypto and Bitcoin that I always lean on when I want to be bearish.
Yeah, the most likely point of failure is the human side, for sure.
Yeah.
So let's talk about some bullish things too. MicroStrategy was back in the news.
There we go.
So they bought another, what, $2 billion worth of Bitcoin, I think just over 20,356 Bitcoin at like $97,514 each. So they're now just a hair under 500,000 Bitcoin. And the other interesting piece I saw too is BlackRock increased their stake in MicroStrategy from just over 4% to 5%. So they're a big believer in MicroStrategy too, which is always good to see.
Yeah. And, you know, MicroStrategy used a convertible note for that. So, you know, they converted a previous note a few weeks ago, and then they refreshed that again. So they're back to being more levered, which should be more volatility, which that's what they're all about, is a volatile stock price. And so the options market should increase again. I mean, he's in like this whirlpool of levering up, then increasing volatility, then Bitcoin price rises, then that delevers him. So volatility decreases. And then, but now he's got more headroom to get more leverage to increase volatility. I mean, he's, you know, it's just in the washing machine right now. And I mean, it's going to work until it stops working.
Yeah. Did you listen to his speech about how the US needs to be the first and only to buy 20% of the Bitcoin supply, and they need to do it before Russia and China and everybody else does it?
I did.
So any insights from that?
I mean, to me, it's kind of it's not that dissimilar from his speech with the what was it, the ultra bull case and the bull case and all that, where it's like, you know, if you lever up and this, you know, this is where you can be and things like that. It's kind of, he just tweaked that message for the U.S. government. And it's been a common thread in Bitcoin circles for years about whoever moves first wins, whether it's corporates or retail or sovereign, you know, wealth funds or central banks. And so it's going to happen. I mean, Abu Dhabi's got almost $500 million of exposure in their sovereign wealth fund that was exposed this week. And so, you know, you keep getting chipped away at these little $500 million positions that other countries have. The United States, somebody's going to come in in a major way, and you want to be the country that does that. So whether it's a country that dips their toes in first and then pounds on a big buy, or if it's somebody that just says, all right, we're deciding to get in and look, here's how much money we have. 5% of that is $40 billion or whatever. You know, the numbers get a little crazy with these governments and central banks and sovereign wealth funds. So, you know, you're talking like trillion plus dollars in several funds. So yeah, I mean, he's right. Whoever gets in first wins. I think that if your bear case is Bitcoin could go to zero or all these issues, it's just really, really hard to defend that position. So if it doesn't go to zero, then it goes up for a long time. You need to be the guy that gets in there first, and then everybody else that gets in just bolsters your position. So, you know, if anybody can get to 20%, it would be the United States. I don't know that they could even do that, just from a, like, the buying pressure may be overwhelming for the supply available. Like, that's 20% positions, 4 million Bitcoin. Exchanges have like 2 million Bitcoin. Where are you going to get the other two? you got to pry it out of people's hands by raising the price. So I don't know that that's even something that I would consider to be logical. But, you know, Michael Saylor doesn't think small, right? He's like, once you decide you're right, you go full speed. I don't know how many people think like that. And the more people that are involved in a decision, the less drastic it is like that. Everything gets tampered down in a committee. And so I don't see that being something that would actually happen. But if you said we could get 5% of the supply and put a million Bitcoin together in the U.S. sovereign wealth fund or U.S. central bank, whatever, then I would say that's probably reasonable, or it may be a stretch goal, but it's not something that couldn't be done.
Yeah, I mean, I think what's missing here is if this does start, the waterfall effect that happens with states and counties and municipalities and on all that, that try to do the same thing, which I don't know how the U.S. ever gets to 20%. Right. Now, what's interesting that I also saw MIT's crypto economics lab, the founder of that is saying the opposite of what Saylor's saying, that Bitcoin doesn't meet the necessary criteria for a reserve asset. And I was sitting there and I was like, what? That doesn't make sense, because he was kind of arguing that if the U.S. does that, it's going to say we don't have a strong U.S. dollar, so we're buying Bitcoin. But then at the same time, MIT is also the college that has hired Gary Gensler to teach AI. And we've realized that Gary is not really a great person that anybody should be listening to. So it's hard for me to trust anything that comes out of MIT's mouth now at this point, too.
Well, not only that, if you're putting up Bitcoin against the dollar as a single use case, I mean, that's like saying selling treasuries is saying that the U.S. dollar is not good of a store of value. Like, you know, like there, it's almost like a separate asset class. Bitcoin being different because you can actually go peer to peer with it and buy, you know, on Lightning, you can buy lunch with it. But Bitcoin isn't going toe to toe with the dollar, and it may never. The longer this goes, you know, you need to get a ton of people valuing Bitcoin before it starts to go against the dollar. I mean, so I don't know that I'm worried about that. You know, I don't know how deep this guy is into Bitcoin, or if he's like, he had some undergraduates do some research, hand him a report, and then he read it. You know, I'm not buying it, right? Like, it's all store of value right now. I mean, the use case for Bitcoin being against the dollar, which is just medium of exchange, is in the dollar is a store of value for some countries with terrible local currencies that inflate. But that's not a good excuse, and it's not comprehensive enough to convince me that you understand the breadth and depth of what's going on. So that's not going to bother me, you know.
Well, to me, it's one of those things where if AI is going to change the world, and I kind of believe it's going to make a huge difference, once all these different AI agents are out there, how are they going to transact money? And I mean, it's hands down, it's going to be Bitcoin, because they don't want to have, I mean, they can't go to a bank and say, hey, why are you holding my money? This is mine. They're going to do it in a very decentralized way that they can send money wherever they need to, right? So they're going to choose Bitcoin. It's going to be a no-brainer. I think once the rest of the world wakes up and says, okay, I don't want a government telling me when I can and cannot spend and do whatever I want with my money, then I need to find another alternative. And I think that's when it starts to take off.
Right. I mean, AI agents can't go to a bank and put down their social security number and open up an account, but they can all create Bitcoin wallets and they can all transact across it that way. So I think we've already seen some AI agents spin up their own wallets and transact in Bitcoin.
And meme coins.
And meme coins. Yeah. But I mean, you know, anything that's serious is going to look and say, okay, well, there's 11.9 million meme coins out there. That's not for me. I'm an AI agent. I can think my way through this. The probability of Bitcoin being the winner's super high. That's where I'm going to go. So to me, if AI does take off in the way that it appears to be, and does start to become autonomous or more autonomous and performing transactions and exchanging value, then there's really not a lot of choices, because I don't know that humans are going to be happy to hand over their checking account password to an AI agent to do transfers. So let's see what we got. I mean, it's just another reason that Bitcoin's going to win.
Yeah. So going back to strategic Bitcoin reserve discussions, we've been wondering why Georgia hasn't really been getting into the mix for a while, and now they did. So it's interesting. We may be the first state that both the Republicans and Democrats submitted their own proposal. So the Republicans submitted theirs with a 5% cap, and then 10 days later, the Democrats submitted one that had no cap, which I guess was kind of surprising, because it's like, wait a minute, the Democrats are starting to wake up to this. What took them so long? That's amazing. And then at the same time, you have what, North Dakota, Montana, Wyoming, and Pennsylvania have rejected their Bitcoin reserve proposals. So there's still, I think, like 19 still pending. But there's a lot of stuff going on and behind the scenes with that too.
Yeah, and I think the latest number I saw was 30 states have had proposals go in. It's probably more than that now. And some of them have been struck down and on floors and things like that. But you just need one to pass, right? Like, and a lot of the vast majority of these are the first time any of these state representatives have seen or heard of anything like this. You know, it's just really early. And these guys are typically on the older side, and that they're going to be typically biased away from Bitcoin. And so to me, it's going to be whoever goes first wins, like we talked about on the country scale. And then honestly, there's a lot of states whose GDP is similar to other countries. So if you're another country that's in that cohort and that GDP range, then now you have to start really thinking about it, because you've got a global competitor that's making a move, and the game theory kicks in as to whether you're going to make a move or not.
Well, speaking of countries, you got what, Switzerland, Brazil, Japan, Russia, they're all looking into it right now too. And I mean, some of those are fairly large. So it'll be interesting to see if any of the countries are like those countries make a kind of a first move against before the US, which would be intriguing too.
Right. And, you know, Switzerland, they've got some advantages on the banking side. And I think they've got a lot of hydroelectric that's not used much. So, you know, I don't think of them as a power country, but they've got some of the right kind of power to help with Bitcoin. And then, of course, Russia is just energy up and down the stack of their economy. So there's every country has a reason. We'll see who goes first. And honestly, I mean, it's not first, right? I mean, there's multiple countries that already have exposure. So it's going to be who goes in first in a big way.
Yeah. So Russia, I mean, they've been in the news a lot lately, just with them shutting down mining until like 2031 for a lot of their regions. But their Supreme Court is now working to identify crypto as a property, at least in criminal cases. So they've determined that with the spread of cryptocurrency in the economy, there's been a rise in crimes where the digital currency is either in the means of committing the crime, the criminal income, or the object of the offense. So they are going to turn Bitcoin / crypto into property, which is a huge step forward for somebody like a Russia.
And I mean, you know, it feels like they're just a few steps behind the US, who, you know, even as recently as last year was talking about Bitcoin as really only good for nefarious uses. So, you know, that's, I mean, I think everybody goes through, it's kind of like the process of buying altcoins and then realizing Bitcoin's really where you need to be. It's like, you think this stuff is just for nefarious use, and then you realize, oh no, there's a good reason to use this. It's like pagers or beepers back in the day. Like, they used to be just for drug dealers, and then next thing you know, like, everybody's got one, so people can get in touch. So that, it's the kind of technology adoption curve stuff. This is the way it works.
So speaking of nefarious news, Nigeria is suing Binance for $81.5 billion. $2 billion of that is due to back taxes that it owes. The other $79.5 billion is Nigeria is blaming Binance for kneecapping their economy and tanking their official currency. Their official currency, the Naira, has tanked 70% to the US dollar since 2023. Right? So it's crazy to me they're saying that enabling this has been a nefarious use to bring down the Nigerian economy, and I don't think that's a problem. I think your economy is the problem. Everybody wants to get out of the dollar because they don't trust what's going on within your government.
Yeah, I think that tells you more about your position and your currency than it does tell you anything about Binance. Like, if any competitor comes along, you're screwed. That's how bad you are.
Yeah, this is also the same country that held on to a Binance executive for what, a year?
Yeah.
To try to get Binance to pay the money. Meanwhile, this guy is borderline close to death for a couple of months with his back issues and things like that. So it's hard to take Nigeria seriously at this point right now.
Yeah, which is weird. You know, Nigeria had a leadership position in crypto and Bitcoin adoption just a few years ago.
Yeah, and they were like one of the top three.
Yeah, and they're willing to kind of throw that leadership position away. So it's not surprising. There's a lot of bad decisions that get made in like the choppy climb upward in adoption. So this seems like one of them.
I also saw Australia was in the news. Their ACCC, which is the Australia Competition and Consumer Commission, is sounding alarms that easing regulation in the US will create a risk for Australian consumers. Pretty much saying that Australia is working on their own regulations that they think may be coming out by the year end, but because of what Trump's doing in the US, it's going to cause a problem for all the residents of Australia. And this is also kind of the same group. The SEC in Australia has compared Bitcoin to the same thing as using cigarettes as currency in prison. It's like, all right, so I'm not sure I'm going to listen to anything Australia says either.
Well, you know, I mean, Australia should know the prison currencies. Like that's how they got their start as a giant prison island. But, you know, It's just frustrating. Like the politicians seem to just defend the incumbents, and they look for reasons to do it. And you know, if I were to be looking at the United States and their lease or whatever, they're getting more lax on the regulation side. They're going to allow more development and innovation. I wouldn't be like, oh man, we're under attack here. I'd be like, all right, how can we get a piece of this? Right? Like if the train's leaving the station, you're not like, okay, well, we need to start sweeping the station, you know, clean it up a little bit. It's like, no, man, you need to get on the train.
So it's kind of a great lead in. I know you don't pay nearly as much attention to Ethereum as I do, but there's definitely been some highs and lows going on. And one of the highs that I've seen recently is you have over 50 non-crypto native companies that are building on either Ethereum or L2s on Ethereum. 20 of those are financial institutions, and 10 of those are banks, right? So the other ones that aren't those, companies like Amazon, Sony, Visa, Fox, Disney, Microsoft, Google, Budweiser, Spotify, I mean, those are big name companies that are realizing, okay, we're not going to beat it. We got to join it. How do we get involved?
Yeah, I did decide that I've had enough of watching ETH just lose to Bitcoin. So I sold about a third of my ETH stack, which I haven't sold any ETH since the 18 days. And so I'm like, that's enough. And so I added it to my Bitcoin exposure cash flow strategy to use MicroStrategy and MSTY to generate some more monthly cash flow. So that's my view of ETH. So if you were holding ETH, good news, it's probably going to shoot upward because I dropped a bunch.
Thanks to Hal. I always appreciate when you sell coins and then they take a big jump up. So Ethereum also has their Pecker upgrade coming up. They're going to do a couple of things. One, the validators used to have to hold 32 ETH, and now that's going to be extended. They can go all the way up to 2048 ETH, which for a lot of these really big companies that are holding a lot of ETH, that could reduce the total infrastructure by more than infrastructure cost by more than like 50%. And then the other big thing that will do is they're going to allow for the auto reinvestment of staking rewards, which I mean is what everybody wants, right? Why would you not just want to let your rewards compound? Because compound interest is the eighth wonder of the world.
Yeah, and if it's going to work, staking's pretty nice. I mean, like that's one of the few ways to kind of generate, I don't want to say generate yield because it's kind of weird on the structure of the whole network, and whether it's yield or whether it's just keeping up with the inflation of the network or what, but it's, I don't like it much because it's like, oh, we're going to make some changes and everything's going to be better. When you don't know that everything's going to be better, changes can have downsides. So that's one of the things I'm not a fan of, but you know, ETH's kind of its own animal and it's big enough to, you know, get some of that network effect strength, and we'll see where they go.
Yeah, one of the other things they're working on is the EIP 7702, which is pretty much the smart sponsor capability, which what that allows to happen is third parties can sponsor the transaction fees to pretty much allow for free to use model on Web3, which I know you've used ETH. If you haven't used ETH, paying for gas is sometimes a pain in the ass. So what this would allow companies to do is they take care of the gas fees to make sure it was easy for you to use. And I think that's what ETH has been somewhat missing. Actually, crypto in general has been missing, because it would make it more like Web2, and then the engagement and the interaction should increase quite a bit because people are used to that model. They're not used to having to sign a transaction to pay for gas fees, but sometimes the gas fees are more expensive than the actual thing they're buying.
Yeah, the gas fees are, when things are congested, the gas fees are inhibit a lot. They're too high. So yeah, they just like add on and like bolt on another module to this Ethereum Rube Goldberg project, and we'll see if it falls apart or not.
Yeah. So the other thing, you talked about supply of Bitcoin on exchanges. Ethereum's entire supply on exchanges is the lowest that it's been since July of 2016. It's at just under 16%. Back then in July of 2016, ETH was about $14, and then it jumped up quite a bit. So fingers crossed that between that happening and you selling, that all of a sudden we're going to see a huge pump in Ethereum.
That's the real bull case for Ethereum right now.
The lows on Ethereum that I was reading about, so the EIP 1559, which was done a while ago, that kind of was that supply burn. Every time you used Ethereum, it would burn a certain amount, and it made Ethereum deflationary for a little bit. Well, everybody moved their transactions to L2s, so it kind of made it, sorry, it made it deflationary, and now it's inflationary. So it's kind of going the opposite of what it was. So that's been a little disappointing, but I think it's one of those things where it kind of had to happen to make the use case for Ethereum make sense. And then as the use case across the L2s pick up, maybe that brings the deflationary mechanism back to ETH, but I guess only time will tell.
Yeah, I mean, this is about all the ETH talk I can add any value to.
All right, so the other big thing that I saw too, we talked about Helium a week or two ago. They built a project on top of Solana, right? And they were giving away kind of a free to use 5G service using their nodes. They just partnered with Movistar in Mexico, which Movistar is the country's second largest carrier service, which to me is kind of a big deal. Like, if you're going to have a company like Helium partner with Movistar to allow for access on cell phone services that theoretically will almost be free, and I think they're going to pay people to make them use the Helium nodes and all that kind of stuff. It's kind of intriguing. I guess we'll see what really happens, but it'll build out their 5G node infrastructure even more now that they have this partnership with Movistar in Mexico. So that's kind of interesting.
Yeah, I like, there's going to be use cases that work, so keep trying them. I'm not the Bitcoin guy that's thinks everything that isn't Bitcoin is a total waste of time. I mean, you need real estate. Like, gold has a spot for it as an investment. And on the use case side, there's altcoins, some, you know, things are going to work and it's going to move forward. So that's not going to move forward if people aren't trying things.
Yeah. And then one of the other things that is coming out from Cardano is they are having their midnight airdrop. What's interesting is they're not airdropping it just to Cardano holders. So they're airdropping it, the entire distribution, over 135 million people across the crypto space. So if you hold Bitcoin, Solana, XRP, Cardano, there's a chance that you're going to get some. There's not a lot of details of how you go claim it, but it is one of those things where they're kind of giving it away, and we'll see how it goes from there.
Yeah, I don't know that I've ever received an airdrop. Like, maybe I have and I haven't claimed it. You know, it's like something that's usually it's not available to us anyway. But
for the past 4 years, you haven't really been allowed to do it in the U.S. That has changed here as soon as Trump took office. So there's a handful that are coming back to the U.S. And there's been some huge airdrops in the past 4 years that would have been great. Uniswap was probably one of the biggest ones a while ago that was pretty awesome if you had used their decks, but Yeah, we're trending in the right direction, I think. It'll be interesting to see. It's one way that you get the community involved, right? If you give them tokens, they're more likely to be a part of it rather than having to pay for it. And then we'll see what happens from there. I did read, too, that one of VanEck execs thinks Jack Dorsey is Satoshi, which is kind of hilarious. And one of the reasons that they said it is he goes to all the Super Bowls and all these big events, and he always wears a shirt that says Satoshi on it. So they're like, he's hiding in plain sight.
That's exactly what a guy named Satoshi would do. Do something monumental for like the globe, then disappear and then show back up wearing a Satoshi shirt at the Super Bowl.
Yeah, I think someone had asked him in a podcast a while ago saying, are you Satoshi? And he's like, I'm not, but would I tell you if I was? What do you expect?
I mean, he's got the right personality to do something nice for everybody and not say anything about it. I mean, but it's kind of about it. I don't think that's the case.
Yeah, I mean, there's a couple of reasons that were uncovered that they said there's crazy ties that make sense, but I don't know. He could be. If he is, that's amazing. It's one of those that hopefully we'll never know who it is, or at least not till they're gone. And there's no way to do anything with those tokens, because I think it's better for that person, whoever they are, whether it's a person or a group, to just kind of disappear.
Yeah, I mean, if it is Jack Dorsey, that'd be great, because I feel like the risk of him being like, yeah, it's me, and then just starts cashing in Bitcoin tokens and crashing the Bitcoin market, the chance of Jack Dorsey doing that's super low. I mean, he looks like he lives in a tent. So I don't think he cares too much about having an extra several billion, $100 billion.
Yeah. And then I also did see FTX is back in the news. They are finally starting to pay back some of their money. So they have about a $16 billion repayment fund, the first $1.2 billion to creditors with claims under $50,000 is supposed to go out. The only bad part about this, and I know we've talked about it before, the prices they're returning it back to everybody on is based on the November 22 prices, which if for those people that don't remember November of 2022, Bitcoin was about 20K, which now it's, 4.75X higher. Ethereum was at 1.5K, and that's at 1.7x higher. Solana was $30, and now it's at 5.5x higher. So people are kind of getting screwed if you had money in FTX. And it just goes back to, we talked about Bybit. If you don't hold your keys, then they're not your coins.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know how many times this has to happen to people before they get their stuff off of exchanges, but it happened again. And yeah, I mean, these bankruptcies take long enough that it really hurts. Like, yeah, that sucks.
Yeah, and it won't be the last time. It'll continue to happen. So what else did I miss?
I don't know if you could have gotten anything. Well, one, Jane Street announced they hold $2.8 billion in Bitcoin ETFs. That's $2.8 billion, and Abu Dhabi's $460 million in the sovereign wealth fund. So you're talking about five times what Abu Dhabi's got in holdings. And Jane Street, even if they held $100 million, it would be kind of a big signal because of who they are and their size and their kind of position in the market and like old school institution sort of mindset. So I think that's worth noting that there's another big player that's got Bitcoin exposure on their own balance sheet and not for their clients. So that's something. The other couple of things I had, you got no chance of knowing this. Eric Simler from Simler Scientific was on a podcast I listened to, and my key takeaway was he's kind of doing something similar to Michael Saylor, that every time he's around other business owners or CEOs and conferences and things like that, he brings up Bitcoin and he's like, yeah, nobody takes me seriously still. And it's, I don't know what's going to have to happen for me to be taken seriously, but the system works. And so it's one of those, we're still early kind of moments where, these guys, that their job is to defend shareholders' value, and they're not seeing Bitcoin as a method to do that yet. So I think that was worth noting.
I think they just got to 0.01% of the Bitcoin holdings too. They just bought enough. So they're Granted, it's still 0.01%, but still, I'd love to have 0.01%.
Yeah, and I mean, based on their size, that's a ton. I mean, you know, yeah. It's not about how much Bitcoin you hold. It's how much Bitcoin you hold relative to your net worth. And that's awesome. So to me, I don't have a... I listen to him. It's not like I like everything he says. It's the same with Saylor. I mean, you listen to somebody talk enough, they're going to hit some things that you don't like. But for the most part, I enjoyed listening to him talk. He's an investor in addition to being the owner, you know, a business owner type. So it's not like he has his head, you know, nose to the grindstone and solely focused on his business and his revenue with his customers. You know, he's got his head up looking for acquisitions and ways to improve his company's position. So, you know, guys like that are going to be the ones that pick up on Bitcoin as a way to improve their company. And so, surprise, that's who he is. And they'll attract other people like that. And then it'll, you know, spider web out from there. The last piece for me is I hit my 4-year anniversary of buying my car. I bought a Model Y in February of 2021. This was when they were accepting Bitcoin as in order to buy a Tesla. Bitcoin. So basically the day I bought mine, Bitcoin hit the exact same price as my purchase price at $52,000. So I took a screenshot that day of like the Bitcoin price and my invoice just to kind of keep that in my pocket. And now that Bitcoin, you know, it was closer to 100,000 when I looked at it. Today it's closer to 90,000, but whatever. You know, you go from a $50,000 car and a $50,000 Bitcoin. I could have just given them a Bitcoin and now I'd have a $25,000 car and that's it. Or I could finance the Tesla at 1.9%. And now I've got my $25,000 Tesla and a $90,000 Bitcoin. So, you know, there's the last several months for me have been just riddled with thinking about how to incorporate Bitcoin into like the fiat stuff that everybody does. And so that was like, yeah. And if you're going to get a loan and you can get a little bit more than you need, just go ahead and buy Bitcoin with it. If it's a 5-year loan and you need 100 grand and you qualify for 120, get to 120, buy $20,000 worth of Bitcoin, pay your note off. It's not like it changes your monthly payment that much. And then at the end of 5 years, see if you're ahead or not. You will probably be ahead.
Yeah, I don't think there's anybody that's held on to Bitcoin for longer than 4 years that's ever lost money on Bitcoin.
Yeah, especially now. So it's you know, there's the deeper you get into the into Bitcoin, the more you start to think of ways that it can work for you and it can work for other people. And as long as the way you're thinking isn't, oh man, if I VPN to this exchange out of China, I can get a 50x leverage on a Bitcoin purchase. You know, like that's not a good way to do it. But if you're going to do something anyway, you know, if you're going to buy a car, you're like, oh, you know, this, I've got two options here. This one's 45,000 and this one's 40. I'll get the $40,000 one and put 5,000 in Bitcoin and see what happens. You know, it's like, maybe I'm not going to have a feature or two, but I'll have $5,000 worth of Bitcoin. And then 5 years later, I'll have a car that I'm ready to sell and I'll have the Bitcoin that's going to buy my next car. So I bought two cars instead of buying the one and I just waited a little bit. So I think there's ways to think about this stuff that's interesting. I think the more you get into it, the more it's front and center in your mind so that you know, you're more apt to see these opportunities. And I'm just kind of like, it's front and center. So I'm kind of into it. So anyway, those are a couple of things that happened in the last week or so that stuck out to me. The Tesla one was probably my favorite because there were times when I bought that Tesla and Bitcoin was at 20,000 and I'm like, oh crap, I lost that trade. But it's Bitcoin, so you just hold on to it.
Yeah. Well, it's one of those where, I mean, I think you and I are both on the same page there where long-term it's going to be fine. There's definitely going to be some ups and downs. And part of the advantages of Bitcoin is the volatility that comes with it, just like MicroStrategy stock. So I think if you want big returns, you have to have the big volatility. And right now is kind of that volatility. It hasn't really been ideal, but it actually hasn't been nearly as bad as it probably could have been considering some of the news that's happened out there too.
Yeah. I mean, like, you know, right now short-term price action is right around 90,000, you know, 108 was about the peak. And if you think that I think that 108's the peak of this bull run and we're going to crash down to 35 or 40 in a normal cycle, like, there's no way this bull run's over. You know, this is, we 108's not the peak when ETFs are here now and countries are buying in. I mean, there's just, the US is a month deep into having friendly regulation. So, you know, this isn't over, but it's just that normal chop and the normal, you know, price escalation and then trading range and build back up a foundation, and then you can springboard off of that. So, you know, it sucks, right? I'm getting text messages from guys that are like, literally a text message that just said,
I mean, you look at a lot of the indexes and like the pie top indicator, right? I mean, it's been pretty accurate and called the top within 3 days every single time, and it is nowhere near to firing off anytime soon. So it's, I mean, it's still looking like end of this year ish Q4 at least, if not longer, before we see a top. So it's just one of those times you're going to see some drawdowns, and take advantage of it while you can, if you can.
No, like we spent, I think we closed 6 days in the 80s. So there's a lot of room to fill the $80,000, you know, prints and fill those up. Like that's it sucks, right? When it was 100,000, you think 80 is a long way away, but it's, I mean, 20% drop in Bitcoin terms, really no big deal.
Yeah, it could be like 2 days worth of gains.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, awesome. Well, Hal, as always, great catching up. Let's talk again next week. We'll go from there.
Sounds good. Thanks, Jason.
If all of these crypto conversations leave you with more questions and you're looking for answers, I've created a product that dives into most of those answers, including why crypto, how to set up a cold wallet, and some of the more advanced strategies for dealing with crypto. Check the link in the notes below and hope to see you there.